Benazir Bhutto, Daughter of the East, an Autobiography. Chapter 3, Reflections from Al-Murtaza, My First Taste of Democracy. Paragraph 3, page 48. Pakistan, where is Pakistan? My new classmates asked me when I first arrived at Redcliffe. The answer was simpler then. Pakistan is the largest Muslim country in the world, I replied, sounding like an embassy handout. There are two wings of Pakistan separated by India. Oh, India, came the relieved response. You're next to India. I smarted out every time I heard the reference to India, with whom we had had two bitter wars. Pakistan was supposed to be one of America's strongest allies, a geographical buffer against the Soviet influence in India and our other border countries of communist China, Afghanistan, and Iran. The United States used our air bases in northern Pakistan for their U-2 reconnaissance flights, including the ill-fated flight of Gary Powers in 1960, Henry Kissinger's secret flight from Islamabad to China in 1971 was more successful, paving the way for President Nixon's historic visit the next year. Yet, Americans seemed completely unaware even of the existence of my country. They were also understandably unaware of the Bhuttos, and I relished the first anonymity I had had in my life. In Pakistan, the Bhutto name always brought recognition, and with it, a sense of shyness for me. I never knew whether people were approaching me on my own merit or for my family's name. At Harvard, I was on my own for the first time. My mother had stayed with me for the first few weeks, settling me into my room at Elliott Hall and calculating the location of Mecca so I would know in which direction to pray. When she departed, she left behind warm woolen shalwar kameez she had gone to great lengths to have made for me, lined with silk so the pull wouldn't scratch. I was attentive to her direction for prayer, but not to her wardrobe, which was impractical in the rain and snow and set me apart from other students. I quickly shed the shalwar kameez and re-emerged in jeans and sweatshirts from the Harvard co-op. I let my hair grow long and straight and was flattered when my friends in Elliott Hall told me I looked like Joan Baez. I drank gallons of apple cider, ate unconscionable numbers of peppermint stick ice cream cones sprinkled with Jimmy's from Brigham's ice cream parlor, and regularly attended rock concerts in Boston as well as the garden parties at Professor and Mrs. Galbraith's, my parents in residence. I loved the novelty of America. The anti-war movement was at its peak, and I marched with thousands of other students from Harvard in a moratorium day rally on the Boston Common and in a huge rally in Washington, D.C., where ironically, I caught my first wave of tear gas. I was nervous as I pinned on my Bring the Boys Home Now badge for the first time. As a foreigner, I risked deportation if I was caught taking part in any political rally. But I had opposed the Vietnam War at home and was becoming even more radicalized by the anti-war fever in America. The motives of my fellow marchers and mine were strangely the same. Americans should not be involved in an Asian civil war. Having been to six different branches of four schools in Pakistan, I relished the continuity of 4 years at Harvard. And there was so much going on. The momentum of the women's movement was building, and the Harvard bookshop was filled with books and magazines about women, including the Campus Bible, Kate Millett's Sexual Politics, and the first issues of Miss Magazine. Night after night, my friends and I gathered to talk about our aspirations for the future and what kind of new rules would govern our relationships with the people we married, if indeed we chose to get married at all. In Pakistan, I had been among the minority who didn't view marriage and family as their primary goal. At Harvard, I was amongst a sea of women who felt as unimpeded by their gender as I did. My fledgling confidence soared, and I got over the shyness that had plagued my earlier years.